Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want to get. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray. I'll be your host this evening. I'm coming to you live from Los Angeles tonight, and I am myself an adult survivor of child abuse. Tonight, we're having one of our question and answer call-in discussions with a hyphenate, a survivor hyphen professional, using an open mic forum. On these shows, we feature a survivor professional who co-hosts and helps field topics that are brought to the episode by you, the listener. Tonight, the special co-host will be Pastor Deborah, who grew up all over the world in a military family with a mother who was mentally ill. And she's now, as I say, a hyphenate, a survivor professional. Living in Pensacola, Florida, she's trained in the ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker, all in one. She volunteers with a lot of organizations, community organizations, and Pastor Deborah says that she can minister by phone, text, Skype, in person, however the Lord directs her, 24/7. She teaches that humans have three parts, being of spirit, soul, and the physical body, and she believes that all three are important and that each needs care. We look forward to having Pastor Deborah as a regular hyphenate co-host, and she is an active member of the NASCA family. In fact, another thing she does is she contributes a significant number of posts to our blog, which you can find at nasca.blog, B-L-O-G. We're delighted to have her here on the show tonight, and there are a couple other people I need to introduce as well. So let me do that, and then we'll get the show rolling. The first of them is from Wisconsin, Laura from Wisconsin. We're delighted to have her. She calls in fairly regularly, and we're delighted and we're really happy that she's found herself a home and NASCA family here, Laura from Wisconsin. Laura, thank you very much for joining us again tonight.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you. The next person on the panel, Laura, is Deborah Hunt from Arizona. Deborah Hunt is also one of our hosts. She's actually trailing me tonight, helping me a bit. She is an active member of NASCA, as I say, and we're always happy to have her on shows too. Deborah Hunt from Arizona. Hey, Deborah, how are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, too. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, me too. All righty. Our next panelist, Deborah, is Lisa from New York City. Lisa's a contributor many days a week, actually, on the NASCA experience. And, again, she's somebody we're always really happy to see, Lisa from New York. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm pretty good, Bill. Another day in paradise. How do you like that? It's good to be on the show, and this is the first night I've been on the show with Pastor Deborah, although I know she's been on the show many times. So I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say. And thank you, Bill.
All right. Well, as you're absolutely right. She has been on the show a bunch of times. She'll be on the show a bunch more because She is a regular co-host, and she's basically the co-host for the fourth Tuesday of each month, and that's tonight. All right, our final panelist, I think, is – no, there are two more. There's one who is a newcomer. I know she only has a portion of time to be here tonight, past 15 minutes or so, and that's Rosa, who we're all getting to know. She's a newcomer to the NASCA family, but we're delighted to have her too, Rosa from Pennsylvania. Rosa, thank you very much for calling in.
Hi, thank you for having me. What's happening tonight?
All right, it's a question and answer show, so we shall see. And who knows what the topics are going to be. All right. Our final panelist is Bobby from Florida. Bobby's from the Miami area. He has been part of the NASCA experience for 3 years or more and calls in fairly regularly on the show. Bobby Hyde from Miami. Bobby, thanks for being here with us again.
Hi, Bill. Glad to be here. I went to hear some of the poetry from the pastor this afternoon.
Right. She's a poet. She blogs on our website as well. Or sorry, she contributes to the blog, which is part of the NASCA website. And we're really happy to have her. Let me, without further ado, bring her on. As I said, this is the special co-host that'll be here on the fourth Tuesday of each month. And because of that, we have heard from her before, and we will continue to. She grew up in a world where, all over the world, in a family where her mother was mentally ill, and that contributed to her abuse, her suffering. She's now, however, a hyphenate, a survivor professional, and lives in Pensacola, Florida. She's trained in ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and a trauma-informed social worker. She works for a lot of community organizations, including us, and we're really happy that she is a representative from NASCA, Pastor Deborah from Florida. Pastor Deborah, thank you for being with us this evening.
I am here, and I'm glad to be here.
All right. Now, we're having a little bit of background noise, and I just want to remind people this will be an open mic show. So, if you're not talking, we'd appreciate it if you would mute yourself until you want to talk. Open your mic when you want to talk and close it again when you've finished your comment. That would help us a lot, keeping the channel open. And so there is right now a little bit of background noise on somebody's microphone, and that's being heard by everybody. I'm going to guess it might be over here. I don't know. All right. Perhaps Rosa, who's at work, I don't know, has the microphone.
It could be,
right,
me, because I'm actually calling from a bathroom.
Yeah, okay.
It could be the water running or something like that, like because of the faucet. The pipes are running all the time.
Okay. Again, anyone who's with us tonight, we were going to keep the mics open on our end because if you mute yourself on your end, then you know, we don't hear the background
noise. How do I mute
myself? Of course,
open.
I don't know. Your phone has a mute function. All phones do. Okay. All right. That's great. Then it works very well. Now, when you want to talk again, unmute to talk, and then when you finish, mute again. And that way we can all have access to the conversation that's going to ensue. Pastor Deborah, what we usually do, as you know, is we throw it out to the audience, or the participants, rather, the panelists, to give them the first opportunity to bring up a topic or a subject that they would like to hear discussed, or perhaps they'd like to question you about in your capacity as a pastor or as a social worker. So we'll do that first. Does anyone between Laura, Deborah, Lisa, Bobby, and Rosa have a question or a comment that they would like to start the conversation with for Pastor Deborah?
Yeah, it's Bobby. I do.
That's what I thought. Go ahead.
Pastor Deborah. Hello. Bobby speaking from Miami, Florida. Pastor, how do you feel about a person who's passed away, who essentially was a criminals. And now the family has to mourn. How do you, you know, how would you be a pastor at, in the family?
Okay.
All right.
How? Good question. How, when a criminal who's done some bad things passes away, how should the family respond to that? Is that what you're asking me?
That's what he's saying, yes.
Okay. Well, if the family of the person who's passed away, the criminal, I'm sure in their own way they love him, even he or did or her did some bad things. If the family who is of the survivor, sometimes, as we see in the Jeffrey Epstein case, sometimes there's a lot of tears because they don't feel like the case was closed, they got their satisfaction. So typically most people are crying and mourning. They're not sure how to handle it. They're not sure how to believe about what to feel. And it's okay to feel any way you want to feel. And in the mental health world, you'll have mixed feelings. You won't know exactly how to feel. You might be glad, happy, sad. Maybe you'd like some revenge, you know. Somebody. And so you'll have a mixed variety of feelings. And then at the same time, some people do have questions about, well, after the person dies, what happens to that person? Do they get eternal punishment, judgment? What happens? And those are some real deep questions that some people do want to explore. But usually what happens from both sides and both parts of the family, everybody is going through emotional highs and lows, sadness, gladness, not sure exactly. It's just a lot of tears and crying. It's okay to do any of it. Does that help?
Well, it helped me a lot. It's out of Bobby. I muted him because we're hearing background noise on his mic. Let me unmute him and let him respond. Where are you, Bobby? Did you hang up? Did he? No, there he is.
I still see him there, yeah. He's still there.
There he is. Go ahead, Bobby.
Bill, there's no background noise here at all.
Well, there was. So what would you like to how would you like to respond to Deborah?
I was saying, Deborah, that isn't my question.
Okay.
My question is how you are going to pass to the family. How they think and how they feel is immaterial to me. That's their business. How are you
going to sit
there?
I think she did answer that, Bobby.
No,
but let's let her be more specific then. If you, he's not. So how would you minister to the family of the deceased?
Of the deceased, okay. Typically, what you do is they have, like I said, a mixture of feelings. Some could be very angry, and they need to express that. Some will miss them. Some won't believe they were that bad. So each person will have a different type of response to the death. And what you would do is you would just meet that person right where they are emotionally and let them express themselves. And if they want to talk about it, that's fine, because each person has a different relationship with the person who died and had different experiences with him, and they will have different feelings and thoughts about that. And my job as a pastor is to pretty much just let them talk and let them sort of express that. And then if they have any sort of very specific questions about if they feel like if they're right or wrong in their feelings, that's really not for me to judge. And I just kind of let them go with how they're feeling. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, that's good. Okay, let's go to the panel and see who has other things they'd like to say about the same topic. Anybody want to share about this?
Yeah, this is Deborah. I just wanted to add to that, and I really like what you said, Deborah. But the fact that, you know, once somebody passes, even though they've harmed you, or even they're still alive, you still have that compassion within you and that empathy to be able to forgive them. And but it also has to be in your own time. It's not just in regards to a particular timing of how it's done. It's how you respond to the abuse and to what you have gone through. Do you agree with that, Deborah?
Right. Right.
Yes, because each person, each of us, in my family, my brother, who was 4 years older, had a different relationship with my mother. He was a male, the firstborn. He had a different relationship. I was the second born. I had a different relationship. So you will have, with the person who's passed away, every person will have a different relationship with them. And so upon their death, you will have just a multitude of feelings and that will run the whole gamut. That will be angry, sad, depressed, missing them, you know, everything you can think of. And a pastor's job is just to sit there with you, let you have your feelings, let you cry, get mad, get angry, and walk with you as you're going through that. And over time, if a pastor's good, they'll stay with you. And if it takes years to sort of come to a place where you're at peace with the passing, then that's what a pastor is supposed to do. And most pastors, they don't charge for what they do, and we're there in the midnight hours. And so it's sometimes it's years, and sometimes it's, and everybody's different.
Right, right. And I think this is true of grief in general. You know, whatever responses you have to any kind of loss, they're appropriate. You know, the one thing you don't want to tell somebody if you're helping someone through grief is that, you know, no matter what their feelings are, it's okay to have them, validate their feelings, help them work through them, sure, but feelings aren't wrong to have, and they do change, by the way, and we all know that there are a series of things that occur, not in any particular order necessarily, but a series of things that occur in a grief situation, and that's all, they're all okay. But Pastor Deborah, I think we're hearing you breathing into your microphone pretty hard. I don't know if you're wearing a headset or something, but just so you know.
Okay.
Let's see if we have any comments from Lisa or perhaps Rose, who's with us.
Very briefly, I have a Rose. I'm here.
Go ahead, Rose. Hey. Who closed her mic?
Mother who was mentally ill.
Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat that comment again? Somebody closed your mic for a second. Go ahead and repeat your comment, please.
Sure. I was wondering what it was like to grow up with a mother who was mentally ill, because I myself have a mental illness, and I was just wondering what it was like to have a mother who was mentally ill.
That's a good question. Pastor Deborah?
Okay. I probably didn't really know much until I was about maybe 8 years old.
Okay.
And I grew up in a military family where you don't talk. It's code of silence. And if you had any problems, you don't go to the doctors because it might affect the father's promotion in the Air Force. So there was no talking, no books, no counseling, nothing. It was, you just deal with it. And I had to learn to find peace, so I would went to church a lot. I'd walk by myself if I had to. Don't know what I was looking for, but I knew it wasn't at home. I knew I grew up without a mother with a full deck of cards. It was very difficult. I saw the family deteriorating, didn't know what was going on. But what I would do at home is I'd go in my living room, and I put on Elvis Presley at the time. And I would create a peaceful little place with music or something, and I would get quiet.
Wow.
And that was how I survived. My brother did not survive. He ended up smoking cigarettes, got off into drugs, got into mental illness himself.
But you survived with music.
Huh?
You survived with music.
Well, it was more I was seeking peace. I can remember at about 13, I just prayed that nobody would be home when I came home from school because I needed peace. My brother would run away from home a lot. He'd come back, run away, get in jail, do that. And I sought peace, and if it was sitting and looking at the aluminum Christmas tree with the lights or some music.
I can relate to you so much, Pastor, because, like, when I was little and, you know, I was being, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just have to cut in and say, like, I can relate to you so much because I found peace in music and I found peace in the Christmas tree lights as well. I just, you know, we're similar in that matter, but please continue.
Okay. And what I would do is I wanted to know what was going on, but nobody's talking. That was the code of silence. So I read biographies about people. I read true stories. I would go to me in the library and books became very good friends. So I would go to the library to find out truth. Because nobody's talking. My parents would read, but they'd read those novels or something, and that didn't help me. And I ended up turning to books. I became I want to know what's going on. I read a lot of books about people who had issues, like the lady that played Scarlett O'Hara. She went mentally ill. Patty Duke. I watched The Three Faces of Eve. I watched people who had issues in their life, and I learned, well, I even read some medical books. You know, I was looking for books and libraries, true stuff, facts, science. I studied history. I studied Alexander the Great, Peter the Great, because
okay.
I had to go looking.
Let's answer this question too, Pastor, at the same time. It makes a difference if the mother in the family could. Well, Rose is saying that she herself has some kind of mental issue. It makes a difference if that person is trying to heal, you know, if shows up for healing, right? And I don't think your mother did. I just want to make that point.
No, she did not. She did not.
Right, right. And so it locked the family out of somebody, you know, she continued to have to suffer from the problems that she was experiencing, which threw the family into a bit of turmoil, too. All right, let's go to Lisa from New York or Laura if they want to contribute to this conversation. Neither one of them has said anything yet. Lisa or Laura?
I'll tell you,
Laura.
I'm sorry, there's a lot of background noise still, and I'm going to pass and I'll hand it over to Laura, but there's still a lot of, like, scraping noises almost. Hard to describe.
Yeah, it's Rose, and she just dropped off. She can only be here for the first 15 minutes of a show. She has a new job where the boss of the job allows her a 15-minute opportunity to be with us for at least a few minutes. Isn't that nice? So...
Okay,
but it's dishwashing, so it's a noisy restaurant that she's in. All right. Laura, Lisa is passing to you. What would you like to make a comment on?
I wanted to make a comment. I am, I guess, the mother with the mental illness. And, due to this, I ended up divorced, lost custody of my child. When she would come over, she wasn't herself. It does change the family values. It does change the way family works.
Okay.
Together.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I'm sure Pastor Deborah will agree, but it does matter, Laura, that once the person who is suffering from the mental problem starts to get help, and it may stay exactly the same way until they do, or it may get worse. But it's really important that we understand the difference between a person who's suffering without any kind of assistance going on, and people who are in recovery of some sort being seen by a psychiatrist or a mental health professional or pastor or all of those. Would you agree with that, Pastor Deb?
I agree with that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the things that happens to both parents and children is there is always a family culture of a code of silence. My mother came into the marriage as her first with a lot of issues from her childhood, a lot of bitterness, unforgiveness in her family. So she brought that in, and it spilled over to the marriage and the family, but they stayed together. Wasn't that pleasant? But they all grew up with, you don't talk about it, you don't go get help for it. That's personal, private business, and it basically destroyed both of them on the inside. I just survived it because I went after peace. I went to learn. I wanted to know what was going on. So something was driving me to go read books, go to church. I went when I'd walk 5 miles if I had to. Don't know what, but I went. And that probably put a shield around me. And because I read and I wanted to know what is going on. But Grandma, we had suicide. We were calling the crisis line, but there was no help. So there's nobody talking. So somehow I made it through. But I learned and became friends with wanting to know answers.
Okay.
And as Bill said, I volunteer with every kind of group. I learn about grief. I read about anger. I read about mental illness. I see.
Yeah.
So I become knowledgeable.
Right. And, you know, as everybody here will understand, you know, once you're traumatized as a child, if you're the daughter or son of a mentally ill person, you know, you may carry some of that scarring with you. And it's a lifelong journey for you, not just for the mentally ill person, but for you yourself to come to terms with the trauma and the repercussions of that trauma. It doesn't necessarily, well, it certainly doesn't just go away. You have to work at it. And sometimes it's an up and down, kind of an ongoing battle, of course, too. All right, let's go to Lisa from New York, who very graciously gave the time to Laura just then. Lisa, what comment would you like to make?
I'm going to pass here again, Bill. I'm probably going to listen a lot tonight just to get a sense of what the pastor is about. But you know me, if I have something to say, I'll cut right into the middle of everything.
I know you. We do have an additional panelist with us who just got here. She has to listen for a little while before she gets up to speed, but I will introduce her and ask her to hold any comment at this point, unless she's listened to the show before she called in. This is Darlene from Tennessee, who's a regular contributor to the NASCA show as well, NASCA Experience and the Stop Job of You Snow. Darlene, thank you for calling in tonight.
Thank you for having us being able to call in and be there for one another.
All righty. I'll ask you to hold some comments that you might make, because we're in the middle of a pretty good conversation, really, and everybody has made comments on it before. So I'm going to ask if there's anybody who'd like to make any additional comments on this topic, or shall we move on? It's up to the group.
I just wanted to actually say that this is Deborah. I just wanted to say that I really appreciate what Pastor Deborah said in regards to the mental health status of having parents like that, because I came from the same background, and I did the reading. I did the exact same research that you're talking about, so I very much relate to what you're saying, and I thank you for sharing your comments. Very much so.
One of the things I learned that when you step out to help people, you may not believe this, but everything in your life can be used, the good and the bad. And I can tell you that reading books is important, learning about it. But there was a time in my life, God set me down at my house and said, you're going to sit here and walk around your yard for 2 years. I go, why? He said, you need a lot of healing. I said, from what?
Yeah.
He said, from 30 and 40 years of ick. Now, that included boyfriends, family. So for 2 years, I walked around my yard, got friendly with the trees and the squirrels, of course, read the Bible, walked. But I wasn't allowed to do much anything in the community for 2 years because that was part of the healing after going to church, getting prayer, reading books about all this stuff, you know, going to groups myself. But I go, I didn't even know from what. And he didn't really tell me. He just said 30, 40 years of stuff. Okay,
yeah.
What are they? And so I'd take it, sit down in a chair, read the Psalms, stay at home. I had to actually pray very hard because I had to look back to see what other people sort of put down for a couple of years in the Bible. Well, the guy Martin Luther, you know, he was kidnapped by a king. And he was taken into a castle, and that's where he translated most of the Bible from Latin and stuff into German. Then Paul was under house arrest. And so people can do things when you're sort of sat down, but you don't know what's going on. I just sat in a chair and closed my eyes, and, you know, for 2 years. Didn't know why, and he just said from 30, 40 years. Because you can't move forward to help really help people till that healing comes.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how deep it is. You don't know what it's about. It could be a boyfriend problem that you broke up with you in the 10th grade or, you know, something that's still there. And so that was one of my things with him and how he did me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Very good. Good question, good answer. By the way, you know, Pastor Deborah is being featured in our newsletter this month as one of our volunteers. She's a volunteer of the month, sort of. And we're really happy that she quickly turned around the ability to be interviewed for Joe Koch, who prepares our newsletter. I'm looking at it right now, and it looks like we did a great job, and We're gonna be releasing this probably, but at the end of the show we'll put it out. But I wanted to make note of the fact that she is being featured there, and so you'll find even more about Pastor Deborah in the newsletter. All right, we have quite a panel. This is great. Laura, Deborah, Lisa, Bobby, and Darlene are all here. Have we got other comments on this topic, or shall we move ahead? It's up to you guys. And it's okay for any of you. What? It's okay for any of you who are on the panel to bring up the next topic then or question for Pastor Deborah. Anybody have one?
I got a Jeffrey Epstein joke.
I think we should get a quote from question from the panel. Somebody was saying something.
Oh, well.
No? All right, what's the Jeffrey Epstein joke?
It is. They finally absolutely confirmed, without a doubt, absolutely, it was a suicide. And they can tell by the 4 bullet wounds to his head.
Yeah. Very good. All right.
Thank you. All right. Back to you.
All right. Sure. I'm calling out to the panel if there's any comment on what we've already talked about or an additional question or issue. And Darlene, you missed a lot of the show until you came in, but now that you've heard what we've said, perhaps you have something that you'd like to present to the group or to Pastor Deborah for a discussion.
I'm just listening right now to see what y'all come up with, because I might bring up something that y'all already discussed. So I'm going to let one of y'all have a hand on that.
What are you going to bring up, and I'll tell you if we've discussed it?
You know,
overcoming.
Overcoming. Can you be just a little more specific?
Overcoming. Just the topic of overcoming.
Okay, I guess, Pastor Deborah, it's overcoming life on life's terms. I don't know. All right, Pastor?
Overcoming, rising above the past, even though it's still with us, but overcoming and getting through, you know?
There you go. So, life on life's terms. Pastor Deborah, how do you do that? How do you do it?
Okay, well, you heard a little bit about my younger years. One of the things that really did help me was staying in church. Now, I can tell you about maybe 30 years ago, I go to a church, go to the altar, as a lot of you know what that means, and I just cried. For what? I don't know. About what? I don't know. Tears are one of the things that wash toxins out. There'll be a lot of tears, and then you think you're doing okay, and here comes another hit. And it comes from family, or it comes from people that you think that are supposed to love you. Had a lot of that. And that'll just knock you for a loop. And what do? Go walk around the yard and talk to a squirrel. Because they usually don't say anything. And then you get put down. So sometimes your healing is just being quiet. Overcoming is, we don't know the deep scars, the hurts that are in us, where they came from. But if you believe in a higher power, he knows. And sometimes you just need quiet time. You just need alone time. And you may not even know what you need healing from. It's sort of like if the doctor says you got something's wrong with your blood. You can't see it. He knows what kind of medicine to give you. Go home and rest. Take some more iron, drink more water, get off the salt. So sometimes we have to go to get a word, so to speak, from somebody that knows something. And to overcome, it does help if you, one of the things within, we'll say the faith community, that really helps is when people get up and tell, well, this was going on in my life, but it got turned around, so everybody's faith grows. And a lot of times in abuse survivors, they don't hear the happy endings. They don't hear, I've woken up from the bite of the apple, and I'm now with the prince, and we're having the wonderful ending. So they don't get a lot of the strength and encouragement to overcome. Some people cannot fight, like Snow White and Sleeping Beauty. Somebody has to come along, a prince, we'll just use that, and fight whatever is the bad stuff so they can wake up. And usually what you learn in all those stories is what wakes them up is a powerful love that brings them out.
Okay. Very good. Powerful love. So that's, in other words, you seek that or you... or you accept it when you find it, or do you actually actively participate in loving first and then feel it, or how would you describe that, Pastor?
Typically what I run into, somebody's been hurt, is they want to love, but they're afraid. So they have to be loved unconditionally through everything, no matter what, maybe for years. No matter what they do to you, they have to be loved. They'll test your love to see if it's genuine. They want to love you, and they want to receive it, but they're afraid. They've been there, done that one. So they want it, they need it, but if you're a counselor or an encourager or somebody trying to help somebody overcome, you got to be in it for the long haul. And they're going to do some bad stuff. I've had them try to kill me in my own home, steal from me, and I have to love them no matter what. And a lot of us don't get that in the therapy mode. And then it's sort of like you have to find somebody who has overflowing I'd be with you no matter what you go through. I'm not going anywhere. Then the person can start going, whew, okay, I can start receiving back some stuff I lost. Let my guard down a little bit. Okay.
All right, that's good. I like that. Other comments from the panel?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, thanks, Deborah. I like mine a little bit more proactive as Bill does, and I think what I would say, if the person can really dig deep down and find a mission, find a project. Bill built NASCAR with his own two little hands, and look at it now. Find a mission. I do a lot of legislative work. That's my project. I would say I just grabbed the thing by the horns and kicked it in the ass and you know, put it in front of me and drove it like an energy towards something more productive. I think part of the problem with targets and victims having depression and having traumatic symptoms is they don't know what to do next, and I don't know if it's a good thing to have them kind of sitting around waiting for something else to engage them or something to appear on the horizon. I think, and it is difficult, very, very difficult. I'm not saying that it's easy. But if you can find a way to take this thing and turn it around and use it for good, like you said, even you can use good things for good, but you can also use bad things for good. I think somewhere on one of Bill's websites, he talks about that his greatest is breaking up. Your greatest injury or
yeah, we have some background noise. Sorry, Lisa.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What did I say?
I don't know the word you used, Bill, but you said your biggest travesty or your biggest injury became your biggest gift. And
yes.
And you turn it around and turn it into NASCAR. So that's just my comment.
Yeah.
And the catharsis involved with doing the work and seeing the progress and seeing whatever, you know, injury or whatever you have, you turn it around and turn it into something good and spew it on the community, man.
Okay. After all, that's what Lisa does. No, I'm kidding.
She does.
All right. So some really good sharing there, Lisa. Thank you very much. Who else would like to respond to this line of discussion?
I'll respond to that. In
okay.
NAMI, has anybody heard of the National Alliance of Mental Illness? What they do is they take a family or a person who has a mental illness through some education. They suggest therapy, but we're going to educate you. And at the end of maybe a 12-week class, they're hoping you've got enough knowledge, you've got support, whether you're a family member. Now you can advocate for that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so they actually have a process of first education. And you go through that, and you learn the terms, you learn everything. And then at the end, now you understand it, now you're ready. You have a support group, you have people that have family members. Now you can be an advocate, and you can do that any way that you choose. But now you are turning, like Bill did, you're turning what was meant for harm to good. You're a voice, you're a speaker, and that's how NAMI does it. And then there's a lot of peer-to-peer groups and mentor groups that help each other to get through the process. But the goal is always eventually become an advocate, a voice, a speaker, whatever avenue, you know, you're led to go into for that cause. And they do that with everything. and they try to get them out there, you know, like Bill just did a conference. You get out and speak. You get out and you make, you write blogs, you write articles, you get interviewed. You go talk to people in the universities. You go talk to, the NAMI has a week, monthly, new people who discover their family members are mentally ill. They want others of us to come in. So you advocate, but first you get educated, and then you step into that role of now helping people, however you do that.
All right, that's an excellent example of taking what happened to you and turning it around. So what I usually say, Lisa, and I'll repeat it for everybody now, is I was surprised to find, but it was true that I found out that the thing that I thought was the worst thing about me turned out to be my gift. All these things that are terrible about us in recovery can become what we have to offer somebody else, in other words. And I had not heard, I'd heard of it, but I'm not that familiar with NAMI. And you will read about NAMI in the article that Pastor Deborah is featured in, where she was interviewed by Joe Koch for the NASCA newsletter as well, and we invite you to do that. There's also, by the way, an article by Deb Ferguson, who's one of our volunteers, called The Start of a New Chapter, because our theme this month for the newsletter is specifically the end is just the beginning. And so it really fits in with tonight's discussion. The end is just the beginning is the theme of the newsletter for this month, because I figured we're leaving the summer and going into the fall, but the end is just the beginning, you know? So, all right. Any other comments on what we're talking about? This is a great topic, and we're doing very well with it. Anybody else?
It is a great topic, and this is Deborah. I just wanted to ask everybody on the panel. I agree with what you just said, that what you think is your greatest weakness is your best strength. And when you realize that in your recovery, because I know it's different for everybody, but when did you realize it and when did you embrace it is my question.
Oh, okay. Somehow when I was a child, I knew I was to help people. I was always, okay. Now, you go through the years of the ick, and somehow, you know, we're all going along through school, and we get in little clubs and we do something. We're doing bits and pieces of it. And then you come out and you get married, you have children or families or whatever, you're still doing little. You're helping people. It's called helping people. And then what happens when, if you get any therapy and stuff, the goal to always overcoming is like what Bill did. You take what happened to you, you turn it around, you become maybe somebody different, and now you become a voice for what happened to you many, many years ago, because a lot of children are stepping onto that path now. And now you can be a beacon and a light for them. You can make it. Yes, I went through that. It does end. It has a happy ending. You can turn what was meant. And Bill is a wonderful example of that. So by you getting through it, however you need to get through it, how intense you have to work, how disciplined you are, doesn't matter. You can say, like what Bill did, you can overcome this and you can turn it. You can be an advocate. You can help other people. And now your voice becomes an encouragement. It takes time. You know, we all stumble. I'm sure Bill didn't know what to do at first. Most of us don't. Some of us have to take classes and public speaking, got to learn how to do the techie stuff. You know, we don't know. We just know we want to help people. And whatever happened to you is usually your area of where you want to help. And so you go study it. You read books. You watch movies. You talk to people like Bill. How did you get where you are? I want to be able to do what you're doing. What did you do? Did you take a class? Did you read a book? Did you? What did you do? How did you step out? And then Bill will tell you how he got there. Everybody's time is different. Some people it's longer, shorter, you fall back. And then that is how you overcome. And like you said, you find that mission, whatever it is. Usually most people want to be a voice for the people that it's still happening to, whether it's changing laws. I used to go to Washington. I lobbied the senators and the president for mental health stuff. I worked with the professionals, and then I had to work with the people who had problems. So you're working at all angles. Maybe you want to help parents or grandparents. Well, you go read books. You learn. You go to classes. You go to seminars. You gather the information. You learn about what the PTSD is. You go to support groups for it. You write blogs like Bill. You write your story. And then you say, hey, Bill, I'm learning. And then somebody will be ahead of you like Bill. And he says, okay, I want you to do this for NASCA. He said, I'll help you. That's what he did with me. I'll help you. And that's what we're, some of us were a little farther down the road, and we'll go, we'll help you get there. Now, your story is different, and your voice is different. But we can show you some of the things. Bill taught me how to talk on the radio. Okay. And some of us, we have to learn techie stuff. We have to write. We have to learn to blog. We have to do social media. All kinds of things. Go to support groups. Go on walks. Okay? Go, like Bill just did a talk. It doesn't happen overnight, but you're overcoming every event you do. You're giving voice.
All right. Very nice comment. No, very nice comment there, Dr. The pastor. I also want to warn people that, you know, you'll have this gift for the rest of your life if you continue to heal. An awful lot of people, however, kind of jump the gun with their trying to think they're, and this is very common, okay? Well, we finally give up our story. We start telling our story and we think, oh my God. In fact, some of us think, if I tell my story, the world is going to change. You know, that's what we think. And that's not, I can tell you that's not going to happen. It's better to use the slower pace of the turtle, you know, the tortoise, than the hare, you know. Because over time, you bring into yourself, you have much more to give and much more on a solid plane. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be active. As Pastor Deborah says, there's a ton of stuff you can do right inside NASCA, and we need this. We really do need it. It's a community of people here. And over time, I mean, I didn't start NASCA, Dr. I keep saying Dr. Deborah, I'm sorry, Pastor Deborah.
That's all right.
We started NASCA when I was fully 25 years in recovery, and I had been doing working with others a long time. I didn't do it lightly. I waited until I thought I had something to offer, and it was the right moment for me to kind of emerge and go very public, which is what I did. And I warn against that for people who want to jump the gun with themselves. You'll always have it, but, and by the way, it's mostly a vocation, but it's an avocation. People don't make a living at this. Sometimes you can become, for example, a counselor or something like that. So you might make a living in that sense. But an awful lot of the giving that you're talking about, Pastor, is freely given and should be. At least that's how I see it.
I have a question, Pastor. It goes back to ties in with my question earlier. I know the show's probably taken a different spin, but it was something that I really need to ask. I have a mental illness myself. I'm bipolar, and I want to have children someday. But do you think that I should not, based on your experiences? My bipolar is under control. I would not want to put somebody through anything that you went through. I'm very good with children.
Her mother's illness was not under control, you know, so there's a big difference there.
Right.
Rose. You are actively pursuing the solution. Yeah. Okay, Pastor Deborah? Yeah.
Okay. Bipolar, just about all the mental illnesses are pretty well controlled these days with medication. maybe proper rest. A great story. If you want to read about it, it's Patty Duke. She discovered she was suicidal. She had maybe schizophrenia. She had, and her family stayed with her. She was doing her movie actress stuff. And when she figured out she was very suicidal, what she had, they put her on medication. There's a book out. I read it. And she had to adjust her life a little bit, couldn't work quite as hard, had to rest, maybe change her diet a little bit. But her family stayed with her. She was able to work. And you will know her son. He played in The Lord of the Rings, and he was Sam.
Oh, my God.
And, okay, that was Patty Duke's son. But when you read these people's stories like that, she's dead now, you learn what their families went through, how the family stayed with them. You see the ick, but they got under a good doctor, medication. They changed their life however they needed to. The family supported them. She kept working. She kept doing movies and theater and stuff. You can do it. But it's sort of, you don't have to be afraid. The family is knowledgeable of it. So they would keep their eyes, make sure she wasn't getting too tired if she couldn't work as long as she used to. And she raised her kids. And she had a happy marriage. And a lot of times, one of the great stories about this, any kind of trauma, is the Three Faces of Eve. She was a little girl, and she had to kiss her grandmother. It wasn't sexual, but she formed some, we'll call multiple personalities. But a new one came up because she had a psychiatrist that loved her, hung in there with her. She met a man who loved her and said, we'll get through it together. She went to therapy. She did everything the psychiatrist, and she overcame. And then she told her story. So sometimes you have to have a group of people in your life, family, relatives, children, pastors, churches, NASCA, support for years that they'll be with you. Like if you wanted to do advocating, you talk with Bill and you learn
what you do. I do want to do advocating. I would love to do advocating. In fact, I have plans for something else that I won't get into today, but it's I have plans to advocate for who's been to trauma. I won't get into today, but I really want to talk about with mental illness. I really wanted to touch on that because it's something that's been bothering me for a while.
Here's what I tell people. You can live with it, and they'll tell you a NAMI. You can live with this stuff. There's a lot of wonderful medications, support groups, 12 steps, therapy, education. Sometimes you have to maybe not drink as much caffeine or something like that. But educate yourself. Educate yourself. Bill will tell you it's a long road, but look at it like every change you make to overcome.
At the end
of it is education. Then you get under somebody like Bill. And say, Bill, teach me, mentor me. How do I get where you are? And you go under Bill and you submit. And if he says, do this, do that, write that. Volunteer here at NASCA. You do that. And if you screw up, Bill will tell you. Needs to write a book.
Right.
Because you need to have somebody say, no, don't say it that way. Don't do it that way. I have to do that with people in praying for people. You have to know how to dress, talk, write, speak. You got to be knowledgeable about your disorder. You have to be comfortable talking about it. You have to be, okay? And that takes time, but you also need to put yourself under somebody who's farther down the road, we'll use Bill, that can sort of guide you and mentor you to get you to advocating.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That does sound very good, and I have been talking to Bill a lot lately, and he has been helping me.
Yes.
Sorry about all the noises in the kitchen.
We have to mute you when you're not talking, so I apologize for that, but it's for the benefit of the entire show, obviously.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. You did alert me to the fact that this might happen. So we're going to mute you now, and you can listen to some other comments that I'm sure some people will make. Between Darlene, Bobby, Lisa, Deborah, and Laura, I'm sure there's another comment on this very topic.
I just wanted to comment on something that Pastor Deborah just said, and I learned this the hard way, so I'm going to throw it back in the ring. But, of course, NASCA does not take any position on pharmaceuticals or drugs or medication, so we certainly don't promote or advocate the use of drugs or to not use drugs. So that's just, I want to throw that disclaimer in there for anybody that's listening.
Yeah, we don't take a position. We recognize that there are certain people for whom medication is, a very good thing. It's a necessary thing. And there are other people who would rather not do that. And we honor, whatever path you come up with. We don't, in fact, tell you, any kind of path you have to take in order to get into healing and recovery. We present a lot of different things, all of them we know of, and it's up to the new person to select the things that they think will be useful to them. But for there are some people, Lisa's absolutely right, there's a lot of sober people here. I'm one of them, and clean people, and I avoid every drug I can. But there are times when, drugs are appropriate. I had a major operation, believe me. They cut me open from stem to stern, literally. There was no way I was not going to take drugs after that, but I was very careful with it, and I weaned myself off as fast as I can. I'd rather have the pain and know that it's the pain of the operation. But when you have emotional pain and you're seeing somebody who diagnoses that you have a – and here's another thing I want to say just to throw it out there. Be careful that you're not too attached to whatever label someone comes up for you. It can be a burden. And just because you're bipolar doesn't mean you can't have a great life, for example. just because you're agoraphobic doesn't mean that you can have a great life. And maybe that you can work on that issue and, a little bit at a time improve the situation you're in. But don't let the mere fact that we all have PTSD. Let me just say that, for example. That label doesn't mean anything because we all have it. It really is not a powerful label. Yet some people will be overcome and say, oh, my God, I have PTSD. Well, yeah, so do we all, is what I'm saying. So Lisa's right, though. Your decision between you and your doctor about what you need to do, we back it when you're following doctor's instructions in the course of recovery. But we're also okay with people who go a different route. All right. Somebody else was trying to get in there with a comment before I jumped in. Who was that? It was one of the women.
It was me, Darlene.
Okay. All right.
Yes, I also wanted to point out that Pastor Deborah and Bucky, all y'all had some fantastic ideas. Like, I remember I used to have to go out in the country and go for walks and admire the beauty of the trees. And I just had to leave and admire the beauty and stuff. And that helped me relax a lot more looking at the nature of God's creation, That really helped me a lot.
That's right. One time somebody said, I was anxious, and they said, well, look at the grass. I said, look at the grass. They go, yeah, green is a soothing color. Well, I looked at the grass, and I kind of bought into that notion, and you know what? I calmed down. It's just amazing. Something that simple. It really helped. That can be the kind of suggestion you can get from anywhere, Maybe you should just look at the color green or pet a cat, that means a lot to us as far as overcoming our anxieties and so forth. And we all have that stuff, all of us.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. And Bill, this is Deborah.
Yeah.
I just want to say that you actually did that for me. One day that I was staying at your house and we went outside in the morning, I'm sitting on the front porch and I'm just starting spilling all these thoughts that are going in my head because they're going so fast. And you said, Deborah, just stop and look around. What's around you? Let's look at the nature. Let's listen to these annoying birds.
that's what I call them. She's right. I call them damn birds.
Yeah.
Tell them,
and
listen to the damn birds. You know,
listen to the damn birds.
I know, and you know, it's nothing that a 12 gauge round wouldn't fix. Boom, and then they all fly. No, but I want you to know, Deborah, nothing any of you have ever heard out of my mouth was original. Nothing. Somebody gave it to me, or
mm-hmm.
maybe I read it somewhere, or I heard
mm-hmm.
it in a pitch,
yeah.
or a speech. But nothing is original to me. I pass it on, but I don't believe there's any original thought in anything that I've ever shared with you guys. So I want to admit that, too. I'm not a guru. I am extremely experienced in a lot of ways, and I'm recovered a long time. I'm in recovery a long time. So, yes, that's a benefit. It's a huge benefit. But it doesn't make me, you know, a guru. I just pass on what I found useful, because if I found it useful, I hope that perhaps others will find it useful, too. It's just as simple as that. So, yeah.
But
I remember that day, Deborah. You were in pretty good shape that day. I remember it.
But, you know, again, those words are still appreciated. But they were very true words. You were just stop and just focus on what's in front of you and not anything else. Just look at what you're feeling in and how it is right now, and then refocus, and then get to where you need to be. And that's, I think, the key to what the point of that whole process is. And
yeah, you need
for
growth to occur, you have to be in a place of peace. It's not going to happen while you're anxious or angry or pissed off having an adrenaline rush or whatever. It's not going to happen then. You know, it's going to happen when we're calm, when we're centered, when when we're present, when we're mindful. In the current moment is where all of that stuff happens. And it doesn't happen worrying about what's going to happen next week or shaking our fist at what happened last week. It happens in today and in this moment all the time. The current moment is the only real time there is. It's another thing I was taught. It's not original to me, but I believe it. It's the only real time. The rest is an illusion. It's either gone or not here yet. The only real time we have is this moment, the present. So that's where we need to be if we want to be comfortable.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, a lot of people, if you ever get out on LinkedIn a lot, there's a lot of posts. And what people out there do is they are putting words of encouragement. They're putting little pictures with children and animals, telling you to have a blessed day, good morning. They are speaking. And if you never get out there or around people like that, you don't have to be on LinkedIn. But if you're not around people that are sort of cheerful, have a sort of good outlook, you know, laughing, okay,
mm-hmm.
talking to nature, taking walks,
mm-hmm.
exercising, listening to music, going out and having fun and laughing, that is a big, as Bill will tell you, it changes your brain chemistry. And it will change your thoughts, and it will something bad from sort of coming in, anchoring, and you get focused on it. So if you go to look at the green grass or talk to the birds, and it changes. But if you can be around people or get a word of encouragement or read books or music was great for me. I dance. Oh, go dance. Go exercise. It does make a difference, and you don't just sit at home and feel sorry for yourself, you know. And I found if you get in a lot of support groups like grief, that's what you do. You need to be around people who are alive, that are living.
Yeah.
But Bill's looking at the green grass. He may not like the birds, but he is looking at them. He's got his mind somewhere else.
I just
and
like
that
something
you
to
have
complain
to have.
About. I just like to complain about something, you know. Like my dog. Bobby and Deborah both know my dog, Pinchy Pedro.
Yes.
But he's my buddy too. But he follows me around just like a puppy dog all the time. It's like ridiculous. But you know, I complain about him, but I love him to death. And animal therapy works really well for me. You know, plant therapy, music therapy. I play music too occasionally. I don't do it too much anymore. But I used to, as a musician, find myself almost entranced in the current song I was playing. And when you're when you're in a band, which I've done many times, the whole time you're on stage, you're in a different place. You literally are in a different universe when you're participating with four other people and you're all making a song together, and maybe the audience is applauding at the end of the song. It's amazing. And I'm a singer. I love to use my voice. That was the one instrument I was born with. We're all born with some skills that we can self-develop. My parents didn't recognize that I had a big musical talent, so I never got any training, but I had a voice. And I sang from everything I could find and get involved in from when I was a little kid, because that instrument came with me, with the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my introduction
right.
to that. So, man, there's just so many things that can be done in the right way that are sort of towards the solution and away from the problem. And that's where we want to be moving.
I just want to add, even when I go to your house and I go down your huge stairway that scares me now, but I go down your huge stairway and I go walk for miles around the hills. That was therapy for me. That was huge therapy
right.
for me. And I was comfortable. It was comfortable for me to leave, for me to come back home, and just to be out on my own and just get into my own head in a different way. And that different way is something that maybe somebody else can touch on, because, you know, that different way, just as you were just talking about, is huge.
It's not an insurmountable step stairway, by the way. Anybody that wants to visit me can, and it's one flight. But we are one flight of cement steps up from the road. We have a retaining wall, and then our yard is flat once you get here. But there is one flight, not insurmountable, one flight of steps.
It still scares me. It still scares me, though. I slid down on my butt. So.
It all depends on your perspective. Right, Pastor?
Bill, you are, when you talk, I teach this, you are singing. Okay? You're singing to us. You found your voice, even through all the trauma, and you'd sing. But now when you talk, it's a song. It has music to it. So you are actually singing. Poems are that way. A lot of people get into art. And if you've got to talk to somebody, go talk to a tree. They won't talk back, you know?
Yeah.
And so you need, when people need to be overcomers and take a step, okay? There's some great movies. If you ever watched The Officer and a Gentleman, and how the guys would help them get over that wall, and they would encourage each other. You need that in your life. Okay, you need somebody that will say, get yourself up, get dressed, and go take a walk. Okay? And if we don't have that, some of us are self-motivating. I didn't need that. Some of us need somebody to kick our little tail and get us moving. Sometimes we need to be reminded that we're not dead. It didn't kill us. It took a good whack at us, but we are alive, and we're going to overcome this and take our voice, take our song, and we're going to turn it for good, because it's still happening to a lot of people, and they're going to know from us that they can beat this. There is a happy ending to it. Now, it may be rough for a long time, and NASCAR will be there for them. But they can overcome. We're proof. And Bill's proof of it, other people. And when somebody's down, then you go to Bill and he says, come, let's go look at the green grass. That is how you get over it. You have to have a band of brothers, sisters, family that's pushing you on, calling you on, keep going. One more step. Take one more. We can do it. Get there. It didn't kill you. You're still here. It took a good hit on you, but you could.
I just
want to
say, Pastor Deborah, I wish I could have stayed on for the whole show, because I love hearing your voice and I love hearing what you have to say. It is so inspirational, and I wish I could talk to you more. Where are you based out of? Because I wish I could, like, get together with you for coffee or something like
all
that.
Right. She's too far. Let me answer for you, Pastor. She's too far away to go for coffee with her, but she's instantly available through LinkedIn and through her Agape Love Is Here organization, .org, which both of which are linked in the description of tonight's show. And even if you have to leave now, you can listen to the end of the show.
I'm home now. I can stay for the rest of the show. But Pastor Deborah, you are amazing. Like, I love hearing you talk, and like, you are so inspirational. And the things you were saying just like speak to me completely and utterly about like how we just have to like keep on persevering, and like, you know, it didn't kill us, so it made us stronger. So
it did not.
You know. Yes, exactly.
It tried. It took a good hit.
It tried its best.
But it didn't get you. And then you go, you should have taken me out, because boy, I'm gonna have some revenge on this stuff. I'm gonna show you that if you get hit,
there's
a happy ending. That's right.
Exactly.
Well,
there's always a happy ending.
Years. Well, I had 2 years sitting at home for what, 30 or 40 years of stuff. There's stuff in all of us that have to. We don't know. Bill will tell you it takes a long time. But if you have a group of people around you that maybe they're further on down the road, or when you're down, they're up. Okay.
Yeah.
And what happened? Okay. And some people won't understand. And then there's some people that they go through it, and you can help them. You find something to volunteer in the community. I don't care if you go pet dogs or something. Get involved in something. And
yeah.
Then
I recommend that last thing you said. You know, animal therapy is wonderful. You know,
yes,
they're such great. They're such great relievers. Let's talk about stress and anxiety. And you can talk. You can just like the tree. You can talk to your dog, and the dog will listen to everything. And it won't offer advice that you're not asking for. You just want somebody to share with, you know. And then it remains loyal to you and loves you to death no matter what. You know, I mean, this is, dogs are the greatest, you know. So, anyway.
Well, if you get out there a lot on social media, you'll see chickens hugging people. You will see lions. Nature was created to love us, and we were created to love it.
Right,
it is
right.
There for us, but it's there to love us, like Bill said, with dogs or friends. They love you unconditionally. They don't know what's going on. And they'll sit there, and it's one of the best things, animal therapy. Okay?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I'm a huge, huge animal lover, whether they're wild or tame. I'm a huge animal lover. You'll always hear that from me. All right, we have to keep going because we're almost at the end of the show. Believe it or not, we only have a little more than 10 minutes left. I want to make sure everybody feels like they were included tonight. So let's see. Laurie, did you say anything recently? I don't think you did. Or Darlene?
I have a comment.
No,
okay.
I'm just going to listen.
Okay. You can just listen. That's fine. Lisa does have a comment. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, I just... first of all, I happen to know personally you're a great animal lover, and the reason I know that is because when you let Jack drink over the holidays, you love him enough to take his keys away, man. I love that.
I know.
So,
that's
anyway,
true.
I know, right?
And I always,
I
know,
go
you know what, I leave the TV on. When he's left here alone, I frequently leave the TV on, but I tell him if he wants to watch the Animal Channel, he can. But he better have it back on CNN or whatever I've been watching by the time I get home. You know, he always obeys. Always.
He does.
So there you go.
Seriously, I want to go back to a comment that Pastor Deborah made a couple of minutes ago. And you said something like, you know, when I call them targets or victims, survivors, whatever label you want to use, when they're sitting at home feeling sorry for themselves, I don't think that's a fair characterization when people are suffering from severe depression or panic attacks or agoraphobia, or they haven't been able to sleep because they've been up all night having nightmares. That, you know, a label like that or a characterization like that is almost tantamount to blaming the victim. So if someone is just too depressed to function, they're not going to be able to just get up and go or think or be motivated or anything like that. When I think
agree.
Of people that are feeling sorry for themselves, those are usually drunk alcoholics, and, you know, they corner the market on feeling sorry for themselves. But I just don't think trauma victims should be characterized as feeling sorry for themselves. I don't think that's what they're doing.
That's right, yeah. All right, good.
I agree with you. I believe what they're doing is, you know, like their new memories coming out, and you're trying to do, and it's difficult when you can't sleep because of the nightmares. I went through that myself, so I know what you're talking about there. And everybody said I need to get off a pity party, and I wasn't on a pity party. I was just having so much flashbacks and nightmares, and it was horrible. So I agree with you there on that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think I'm not by.
What?
Sometimes I think I'm
not
actually bipolar, and I think I actually just have severe trauma.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Be careful of somebody labeling you, somebody saying, oh, you're bipolar, or oh, you're this or that. There are some labels that can be detrimental to our moving forward, because we kind of buy into the, we go and we look up PTSD, I use that as an example, and we identify, we all do. We all identify if we looked up the definition of PTSD. Yep, that's
right,
me.
Because
yep,
there
that's
are
me.
Some, there are symptoms of PTSD that tie in with bipolar as well. I mean, like, you know, I have hallucinations with my flashbacks, and so they labeled me as schizoaffective.
I'm not
schizoaffective. I don't have hallucinations because I'm schizophrenic.
Okay,
I have
Rose, I'm not specifically talking about any particular label, but there are a lot of them, and I'm just saying that it can be a detriment to our moving forward, because we think we're doomed to be that thing, and we're not. That's what I'm saying. So
I don't believe in my diagnosis at all.
Oh well, I don't know about that. Maybe you should, you know, it might be true. I don't know. See, I don't know, because I'm not your doctor. If you're going to a psychiatrist and you get a diagnosis, well, then you have to, you know, consider the source. I'm not one of those sources. You may not want to follow the source. That's true. But we're getting too down into the weeds and being too particular, and I don't want to confuse people. Your journey of healing is up to you, okay, for all of us. I'm saying that for all of us. And NASCA will never tell you what you have to do, ever, because there are so many different choices and so many different paths and so many ways to recover. Pastor Deborah is a spiritual person. She's going to express an awful lot of her perspective in that way, in a spiritual way. You may hear that from me as well. But other people are really, are not going to express it that way. They're going to be, I don't know, they're going to be life coaches, and they have a different way of talking about things, or they're going to be a counselor, or they're going to be whatever. We all have our own path. There's lots of different, I could talk in 12-step terms, as Lisa knows, and she would understand it, and some others here might understand it. Others wouldn't. But it's just one of the things that I have used, a big one for me, you know, as a process of getting into healing. In fact, I'm going to talk about that on Thursday night. Thursday night, I'm the co-host, Pastor Deborah. Because it's the fifth. When we have a fifth Tuesday or Thursday, I step up to the plate, and I act as the co-host for the question and answer show on that particular night. So this is the fifth Thursday coming up, and that means I'll be the co-host 2 days from now. So you can hear about some of that on that show. We got 5 minutes left, Pastor Deborah. What would you like to do with the rest of the show? It's your show, and I want to make sure everybody gets included, but I also want to make sure you know it's your show.
I just think one of the most important things is if you do get diagnosed with something mental health, do some research. There's a lot you can learn. They do. It's like going. They change. They're just looking at some criteria. And if you meet 3 out of 6, and then it,
right.
and then it could change again, and it could,
right.
you know, they rule this one in and that one out. But do some research so you'll be knowledgeable, and you can talk. There's a lot, like Bill said, there are so many different ways and different personnel. It's a free market out there. Some people go a healthy way. They go vegetarian. Some people go, I'm going to go to the gym. Some people don't go to the gym. Whatever suits you that helps you to recover, get healthy physically, mentally, become educated. Don't, you know, look up whatever they tell you that they say you are. You can argue with them. I've done that before. I've done that with my son. No, he does not have that. I'm sorry. That is not what he has. You can argue with him. But
yeah.
You don't have to accept it. You can say,
yeah.
I study this. Become knowledgeable. They don't expect you to be that. Okay?
Yeah.
They're just telling the insurance companies. Okay? And then they're then if you get medication, they're prescribing what that medication says. That's all. But now they're saying, oh, well, you know, maybe we could use some other medication. They don't know. Most of them don't know what causes the stuff. They have no clue.
Yeah. And you have to be careful. You do have to be careful. You know, there's no such thing as a panacea. Even the professional
mm-hmm.
professionals like the psychiatrists who are both medical doctors and have some training in, you know, in helping us in psychological ways, they're going to give you a suggested dosage of suggested things, and sometimes they'll give you a second thing. That doesn't mean that that's what you're going to take. They will adjust things. They will move things around. It's absolutely appropriate. You need to be honest with how you're reacting to whatever you're given and let them do it. But, Pastor Deborah, you're right. A lot of them don't. It's a guessing game. It's 3 out of 6. A lot of times.
That's right.
And then
they don't know.
That's 50-50 odds, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't really know. They don't really know what causes it. They're doing research, but they don't have the answers. They're sort of guessing. And so you need to become educated so you can talk to them. Why do you, okay? And they have, there's not a lot of studying about a lot of this stuff. It's, you know. And
well, you know.
So Bill is
again,
right.
We don't want to get into a huge discussion of whether you should take drugs or not. That's between you and your professional. But here's the thing. Always available to us are the things that I talked about before, the centering. The breathing, the praying. I didn't mention praying. Prayer. You know, the animal therapy and the nature therapy. The exercise somebody mentioned. These are things that will not harm you and that are available to every one of us in spades, you know, huge amounts. And you might as well at least try that stuff. You know, there's body work. There's yoga. There's, you know, there's meditation. Being mindful. And on and on and on. These are things that certainly don't hurt you at all. And I can say that, and I can recommend that you, I won't tell you what to do, but I will recommend that you look into all of these things and select the
mm-hmm.
things that you think will be helpful. And you know what? If it's not helpful, select something else. That's all. All right, we got just enough time for to go around the panel very quickly and thank Pastor Deborah, and I think she deserves it tonight. Starting with Laura from Wisconsin. Laura, thank you for Pastor Deb.
Thank you very much for what you had to say. I learned a lot, and I've got some new things I'm going to try in my little toolbox of tools to use.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, Deborah Hunt.
Yes, Pastor Deborah, thank you so much. You have very great insight, and we greatly appreciate you. Thank you so much. And
you're
I will
right.
be following you.
All right, Lisa.
Another satisfied customer. I was glad to be here tonight, Pastor Deborah. Great show, and thank you, and I'll be back.
Thanks, Lisa. Bobby, if you're there. I know he hasn't spoken at all today after the beginning. All right, Darlene from Tennessee.
Yeah, thank you, Deborah, and
thank you so much for Bill for the show. Thank you, everyone. It was well worth listening to, even though I was late.
All right. We want to thank the NASCA community for this. It's a communal effort that puts on these shows and does all the things that we do. Rose, you're the final person. Very quick hello. We've got 15 seconds left.
Thank you so much, Deborah. I loved what you had to say.
Okay, great. And Pastor Deborah, I'm of course, very grateful, too, that you came on the show. You did a terrific job. You will be back each month on the fourth Tuesday of the month, which is tonight. And we are really appreciative of your participation at NASCA. So God bless you and thank you. I have to sign off. I have less than 10 seconds to start the music. May God bless you and the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Talk Radio.